You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we're always cool, but we never go out of style. Because we were never in style to be able to go out of style. Also, style is a survival joke. This is all a pun about Texas, which we'll get to later. I'm your host, Justin Emlinzeski. And finally, in this fourth episode of the season, things are starting to get back to normal. Although, what is normal nowadays? Maybe it's getting back to the new normal. And again, I think we'll touch on that a little bit later in the show. But when I say things are getting back to normal, my co-host has finally returned, joining me this trip from Dale's lawn, identifying as a woman to forgo his white male gay privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. It's good to be back. I thought you had canceled me like poor Carraro. That like Disney, but I'm back. I'm assuming the paychecks are in the mail.
The paychecks are generously provided to us by our Patreon supporters and our local supporters, so you better talk to them about that. If you want a specific amount, I'm probably going to regret what I'm about to say, but if you have a specific amount you want to give to William, make sure you note that somehow. Man.
I'm gonna put it in my puppy fund. So that's the big news. I have a puppy, and he is being executed right now. He's never been in the studio, so far he is chewing the little frilly ends of the carpet, running around with the ball. So if you hear some noise, I apologize. And he just discovered himself in the mirror, which was a tense 2 minutes of staring. And now every time he walks by himself in the mirror, he gives himself a little kiss. So I may die of cute. In this very first episode that I'm back on the show for this season. So,
well, I had this later in the outline, but we're already here, so let's just talk about it. You sent me pictures of the dog. The dog is adorable. What is there to know about the whole process, about why you decided to get a puppy, how this affects Colt, your dog you already have?
Yeah, okay. Well, I have been looking since 1 year ago, since we're on the 1 year anniversary of our 14 days to flatten the curve. I knew that I would be working remote.
On the day we're recording this, not the day we're releasing this, correct?
Yeah. Correct. I knew that I'd be working from home for an extended period of time. I thought, well, now's a good time to get a puppy. Cole had a health scare. He got all his teeth pulled, but he's better now. And I thought, well, before he gets, you know, too old to socialize with a dog, with a puppy, it'd be time. No, sorry, puppy, don't eat the carpet. It would be good time to get a puppy. And it took until December for me to find someone that actually would respond to me about puppies, because people are also, I guess, having the same, the same logic. Oh, I'm stuck at home. Now's the time to get a puppy. And I got an Aussie Shepherd. That's his name is Remy Remington, to go with Colt. I guess the logic was, since I'm going to be home and I've never actually had a puppy, Colt, when I adopted him, was already 3 years old. And so I get to start the whole journey. I haven't slept more than 5 hours because, I'm waking up to make sure the puppy goes out and stuff like that. But it's great, man. He is super cute. I've already had a bunch of people interact with him. He's still doesn't have all those shots, so he can't really hang out with very many other dogs. Colt loves it.
He doesn't have that vaccine yet.
Yeah, Colt loves it. He doesn't know how to play. Colt doesn't know how to play very well, but he loves it, except for he keeps taking the puppy's toys. So, because Colt doesn't like to share his toys. So I put all his toys in his little play area, and then Colt goes and gets them and takes them all out of out of his play area. But for the most part, Colt just watches him. When I first brought the puppy in, Colt was, he's usually excited when I get home. He was excited. He saw I had a puppy, and he sat down and was really calm and, like, treated him really gently. So it was really good first interaction. He always does good with little dogs, and I don't think Colt's really hung out with a puppy before. He's hung out with little dogs, but never a puppy. So So yeah, it's going good. Struggle is real. Only two nights in, keeping the dog in the crate. But last night I put the crate on my bed and put him in the crate, and he slept like a baby. So I think we're gonna do the whole move the crate further and further away from me as the days go on, as he gets more comfortable here. You know, he had to leave his he was out in Norco, California, which I might have talked about on the show before. Is where I found the breeder. A friend of a friend found him on Facebook, and I don't have Facebook, so. But Norco, California, Justin, I know you're never going to come back to the state. I think we actually drummed you out, and there's probably like a travel hold if you try to cross the border. But this place, man, it's like all horses, and like they have regular parking lots, but they also have horse stalls in every store. So like the Vons, the restaurants, there's horse parking everywhere, and there's horse paths through the city. So it's definitely my kind of place. It was really cool area of California. I didn't know they still had those kinds of areas down here in SoCal, right outside of Riverside, basically. I think that's all to say about the dog. I'm super excited, and he's super excited, pulling on the carpet right now. But I'm going to try and do the show and correct a puppy and do the drops all at the same time. So making 2021 even more challenging.
As if we didn't need any more chaos. You did say that the puppy sleeps like a baby. Isn't a puppy a baby?
That's very true. I think implying he's not sleeping like a newborn. I was afraid he was going to be up a lot, but he made it through the night, both nights, without waking me up. In fact, I woke him up this morning because I just wanted to make sure he went out before he... Because he's obviously not potty trained or anything yet, so I just keep taking him out every couple hours and making sure he does his business and let him sleep when he sleeps. And as soon as he wakes up, take him out. So
cool. And one other question. I see a theme with the naming here, as you mentioned. Will you be getting two more knit dogs named Smith and Wesson?
Yes, but I think Glock will be the next dog if I were to get another dog someday in the future. So
is that a pit bull? That's going to be a pit bull in block.
Maybe.
All right, let's head into other absurd things in Life on the Midside. Take a good look around. Does life really suck? Are we just complaining? I hope that this mic is on. Because I'm on a roll here. I hope this is making some sense. I hope that you throw up your hands and sing it and tell all the haters that they should just shut up and As always, if you would like to support us, you can do so through Patreon or Locals. Patreon is per episode. Locals is per month. You can find either at themidside.com/Patreon or themidside.com/Locals. We are thankful for any and all support. I was going to say we support all support, which we do, but it just sounds bad to say it that way. So as has been happening over the past year, as William said, we're on our year anniversary today, the day of recording, not the day of release, the day of recording, 14 days to flatten a curve. And as has been going on, and as I mentioned in the episode with Dawn, last episode, I'm over these, but still important because they're a big part of life on the midside. We have a weekly COVID-19 update. And for me, the big thing this week is the vaccine hysteria. It seems, William, that when the vaccine started coming out, that was going to be the end of all of this. It was going to be, oh, hey, we actually had a solution to all of this. But now it's gotten to the point of absurdity that South Park is actually going to release a new vaccine special on March 10th. And they're going to talk about the whole herd immunity thing right there. The tagline for the episode is "We will be heard." And they have a Q in the logo, you know, because they're going to talk about QAnon, all that involved with it. And it just seems to me that this has all gone absolutely insane, absolutely sideways. Now it's all about there are vaccine shortages. And even if you have a vaccine, we still have to wear masks because herd immunity is 75% to 80% of the population. It's just... This isn't rational, right? Both sides are irrational, right? The anti-vaxxers and the pro-vaxxers.
Yeah, I definitely agree. The neighbor stopped by, of course, to see the puppy. And we were talking, he for his birthday weekend, went to, which his birthday is this week, he went to Miami. Now, of course, followers on Twitter know that I went to Colorado last weekend, so we were catching up on our trips. I think snowboarding is superior to Miami, but at least in wintertime. He was talking about how different, as a someone who's, that was his first time outside of California during the lockdown here, it's just like how different it was. Like, he went to a club, he went to a nightclub, he went to, you know, he's like, nobody really is wearing masks out and about, you know, like they put it on when they need to, but like, you know, they're just, you know, and obviously there's safety protocols happening behind the scenes, and sometimes, you know, you can see them in the restaurants and stuff like that, but he's like, it's pretty normal. Like, life is back to normal, or normal-ish, compared to, especially as someone, you know, compared to California. And, you know, I've heard, you know, Biden's thinking about locking Florida down, right? We're not going to allow people to travel into Florida because of how free it is. And he said a lot of people have already had it or have the vaccine, and so they're just like, hey, I'm going to live my life now. And is it wrong for them to do that? I mean, this is what they've been, you know, people have been told, right? Like, get the vaccine so you can protect others, and then, you know, you can get back to making some money. And then we have the whole school thing going on right now. You know, in California, we still can't have students in school. You know, the rules keep changing about that. You know, Fauci was like, put the students back in school like several months ago. And now all of a sudden, it's all this tap dancing about putting students back in school. You know, Adam Carolla's had some great rants on it recently on his podcast about that. And that gets back to the vaccine hysteria you're talking about, because if we're throwing away vaccines because you know, they're expiring or thawing out or whatever, why wouldn't teachers be the first in line to go get the vaccine so we can get them back to work? And it's really interesting how essential workers definition has changed over time. I think teachers used to be considered essential, but essentially they're not working. So, or they're working remote, which is, you know, not the ideal thing for students. And I don't know. You have any thoughts on how all that stuff, the education stuff, relates to the vaccine hysteria?
Well, I don't get any of what you said, because as you pointed out, I'm here in Florida. I wasn't even aware that Biden was going to freeze us out, right? I mean, that's clearly an attempt to cripple Florida, because Florida makes a lot of its money from tourism.
Yeah, right? I think I'm imagining him. He's already engineering that thing in the Simpsons movie, right? The big glass dome. I think that we're just going to put that glass dome over top of Orlando. Not that, you know, we can't let people get in and see how it actually works in a freer, you know, more rights respecting state.
Right, and it you know, artificially creates this idea that it can't work when you take away their source of revenue, right? I mean, that's why we have no state income tax here, because we don't need to, because of all the tourists coming to the beaches and coming to the amusement parks, yep, all of that sort of stuff. And it's the same thing education wise like, you know, about a year ago, well, we'll say 11 months, right? Because it's about 4 weeks before my spring break. No, 3 weeks before my spring break. It's 3 weeks before. So about 11 months ago, we had spring break. And then when we came back, it was all remote learning. And I still have remote classes. Like, my first half of the day, my first three classes are remote. And don't get me wrong, the remote stuff's terrible. Like, the kids don't try. There's no way to make them try. They just turn their computers on and they don't pay attention. Now, I'm not saying it's all of them. I'm not saying it's all of them, but it's easier to try and get them to learn something if they're in the classroom. But then there are whole problems with, if we're using government force to force these kids to be in school, are they actually learning? What's the purpose of it? So there's whole, you know, theoretical things about the purpose of education. But as far as the vaccine with it goes, like, I don't need the vaccine. I don't want the vaccine. And schools have been operating fine here without the vaccine. So I don't see why, besides what Adam Carolla says, that they don't want to work, that it has to go into that. And I think that, to me, that's where this whole vaccine hysteria lands, William. It's just people don't want the vaccine to be the answer. They want to continue in this way. And it's to me, it's for a couple reasons. One, there are the people who get power off of this. But then there are honestly the people who prefer staying home all day. They prefer not being social. They prefer not having to have to do productive work to survive. That's why they want to keep pushing this forward and creating these unreasonable standards.
Yeah, I think we're in it for the long haul. I don't expect to, at least in California, for me to... We're coming up on a year now since I've seen the inside of my office. And that's crazy. I've hired 3 people onto my team that have never seen the office. That is also crazy.
I mean, I just don't know how people can put up with this. I just don't know, like, are we really going to wear masks for the rest of our lives? I think we're now getting to the point that the crisis is over. And what I mean by that, William, is it's not the number one news story anymore. It's not the big deal anymore. They're creating other crises. They're making other things out to be a big deal. And, you know, that's going to be the final thing we talk about here on Life on the Midside. So this is kind of like it's passé. I think everyone's sort of accepted this as the new normal. And I think that's a terrible thing because this isn't normal, because we're overreacting to this. And I think that the numbers bear that out. I don't understand, William, and I've said this before on the show, but I haven't said that this season with you here. So I want to get your perspective on this. I don't understand the numbers. I don't understand how the U.S. can have nearly 500,000 deaths. And that's more, exponentially more than any other country in the world. That doesn't make sense to me. A country of 350 million in a world of 7 billion. That doesn't make sense to me. Now, I think the easy response would be of people who want to blame this on America or say, you know, we're doing it to ourselves. They would say, oh, well, that's because Americans are individualistic and they don't want to do things for the greater good. But I don't think that's the answer. I think this is an answer of us counting more deaths.
I think that's true. I just saw a story right during show prep that people are starting to question the flu numbers in Canada. Now, why is this interesting? I dug into it a little more, and I need to dig into it even more. But so apparently the flu death numbers in Canada are computer models. They don't actually track or test people when they die to see if they died of flu. They just kind of gather everyone who dies of lung and heart failure and then, you know, apply a computer model to it and say, well, this many people died of flu deaths. And that's interesting, right? Like, how many of these COVID deaths are confirmed COVID deaths, and how much is just a computer model telling us?
Right, 100%. 100%. I mean, I've seen the flu numbers. That's being a suspicious thing in the United States as well. So it's good. Other countries are starting to look at it as well. It's just insane.
Yeah, I think kind of transitioning since I stepped on the new puppy. You know, I've traveled out of LAX twice this week. Still not dead of COVID. Once to go this last past weekend to go to Colorado for 3 days for my birth month celebration. Got some 3 days of snowboarding in. And then Thursday, we did a day trip up to Santa Rosa, California, doing some site searching for my new location I'll be opening up hopefully this year, later this summer at the earliest. That was just a day trip. And Justin, you would be surprised. My Denver trip there and back, completely full plane, right? This is coming from California, right? Completely full plane. You know, of course, on the flight out, the flight attendants were, I wouldn't say lax. I would just say not overly stressing, you know, the mask wearing, letting people kind of drink their drink and chew on their free snacks. And then just kind of reminding people to cover things up after they complete the service. You know, it's a kind of a short flight. I think it's like an hour and a half, right? But on the way back into LA, clearly an LA crew, because this is the last flight of the evening, constant reminders to keep your mask on and only take sips and bites and put the mask back on in between sips and bites. So, Justin, what's the science behind sips and bites versus taking it down to eat? Are we really kidding ourselves that much?
I think it's all rationalization, and I think it's because it appears to be true. I think that's the whole mask thing. I think that's the whole double masking thing. I mean, just think about from a appearance standpoint. Wouldn't it appear if you have the barrier down for shorter amounts of time, you're less vulnerable? Whereas if you have it down for longer amounts of time, you're more vulnerable. That's what it would appear to be.
But right.
We don't, like...
I don't think that's reality. How it works. Yeah, exactly. If you're sitting next to someone with COVID and you take your mask down even once, that's all it takes, right? Like, that would be all it would take, right? Like, sure, there's a probability, but like even like think of how many times you would take it up and down and the touching of it, just the touching of it, right? That constant touching of it already invalidates it, in my opinion, right? Like, if we're actually dealing with something, a dangerous virus, you would not want to touch your mask when you put it on, ever. Right? You would want to throw it away and get another one, or clean it, sterilize it between touches. So yeah, it's just all show.
Yeah, it's all show, because in the situation you posited, the higher risk percentage wise is simply sitting next to someone who has it. The mask isn't going to do all that much if you're sitting next to someone who has it for more than 15 minutes at a time. That's the greatest risk of all.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, so. The Santa Rosa trip was great. We found some good locations, so hopefully I'll have more to say in future episodes about that, but I just thought the COVID connection there was interesting on the flights.
Yeah, and I mean, I've been back and forth to California once, so I've been on a flight, so I get it. I mean, in California, you're supposed to register when you land, and you're supposed to, you know, say, oh, I'm going to follow the 14-day...
I think that's only certain. Oh, we're getting excited in here. I think that was only certain counties, because I had to make sure I flew into Oakland Airport, because San Francisco is one of those places where you're supposed to quarantine. And I was like, no, I'm just flying into Santa Rosa, or flying into Oakland, driving into Santa Rosa, avoiding San Francisco altogether. And that way I don't have to worry about the 10 or 14 day or whatever it was travel restriction.
Yeah. In LA, it was in LA, you're supposed to sign that thing and everything. I don't know.
Yep. So, you know, they didn't ask me to do that when I got back, so I think it's out of LA now, but it's definitely still in San Francisco.
Oh, in LA, they did. They never asked me. In LA, you were supposed to go online and do it voluntarily.
Yeah, fuck that shit.
Yeah, exactly. So the next thing I wanted to talk to you about is something that weirdly feels risky to bring up in the year 2021. It feels like if you bring it up and say something positive about this person, people are going to get mad at you and we might lose some listeners. But you know what? I'm willing to run the risk, and I don't think it's really a risk. I think people will understand. So a huge news story this past week for me was Rush Limbaugh dying. And what I mean by that is I'm not even talking about like, oh, you know, he was this huge political figure and people are dumping all over him and talking about how terrible he is and blah, blah, blah. I just mean from a personal standpoint, it's crazy to me, William, before I even get into any personal stories, it's crazy to me that somebody who is alive before me and was influential on the culture since before I was really cognizant of anything. Right. And I'm not saying, you know, you're not aware as a child, but I think like Rush Limbaugh's show started getting big, or he started broadcasting like when I was five. So somebody who has been broadcasting that long before I was even aware of the world and the things that were going on is no longer around. That's crazy to me, just conceptually.
Yeah, I was... I actually watched a few. I had to, you know, search around for it because, of course, all the stories about his death were all about controversial right-wing conservative Rush Limbaugh, blah, 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 like just very like, spitting on his grave. And Twitter was amazing, too. Vote for that. But, here was a person who changed the broadcast industry, right? He was an incredible talent. And his business sense was so good. He was basically uncancelable before we even really had this term cancel culture. All through the 90s, people would go, he never could get like what would be considered a major national sponsor, right? Like Coca-Cola or Pepsi or a car company, right? Like those just were not on his radar or even possible. So what did he do? He became a kingmaker for a bunch of small businesses, right? Businesses that would normally not get a national audience got his, like, what is it, 30 million was what his audience was at some point? Or maybe it might be higher than that. I just remember it being a huge audience, right? And it's amazing what he was able to do business-wise. He waited a while before creating his website, and then when he created his website and his newsletter, it became like a huge moneymaker for the business. The Limbaugh Letter, his newsletter, is one of, I think it is the most widely subscribed political newsletter. The amount of charity work he did, all these things, right? Just a great impact on society. Take or leave his politics, at least for my formation in my life in the 90s, that was the way he presented arguments with his irreverent humor and insight helped me as a thinker, whether I ended up agreeing with him or not. In my culture, it's very blue collar, but it was very Democrat, right? Like the old blue dog sort of Democrat culture, like carrying around a Rush Limbaugh book or listening to the Rush Limbaugh show amongst certain folks would be, you know, scandalous, right? In my little town of union workers, right? So getting that independent thought and that uncovering of the media narrative, for me, that was because I listened to Rush. I understood that the media had a narrative because of what he said, whether I agreed with what he said or not. He pulled that veil back for me, and that's the definitely the impact he had on me as a thinker early on.
Well, I think that the pulling back of the veil of the media narrative, I think is what he was really providing as a service, if you will. I mean, obviously his service was really entertainment, but it's what you just said. I think there were two levels to what he would talk about. It's sort of like, okay, this is what's going on. Oh, and then here is what I think the answer is. But I always found him to be very reliable on the, hey, this is what's going on, at least when I was younger. Yeah, when I got sort of into college and I'll say more grad school and beyond, I sort of stopped listening to him. But I really remember, like you said, you know, I grew up in Massachusetts, right? Blue state America, deep blue state. And I remember listening to him and getting that different perspective and being able to think about things I wouldn't otherwise think about. And I really have a strong memory of one summer, and it wasn't for the whole summer, it was for like a week or something or 2 weeks. I took a trip with my dad where we drove to a business he had a contract with for his business in upstate New York, and we listened to the Rush Limbaugh show all the way there. And that's, you know, that's somebody I think of, and all the way back. And that's somebody I think of over all this. Like, my dad has listened to Rush Limbaugh every day for, you know, how many years would that be? 85, 95, 2005, 2015. So that's like 35 years. I even called my dad after I heard the news, and he said the last show Rush did was a couple weeks ago, and that he was still, when he was on the verge of dying from lung cancer, William, he still was broadcasting. And my dad said that Rush said that that's what he does. So of course he's going to keep doing it. And to me, that's a moral man. That's a man of integrity. And now I'm going to get in trouble because of his drug addiction and all the things he said. Look, I don't agree with anyone 100%. I've even said on this show before, you don't agree with yourself from yesterday. So do you even agree with yourself 100% of the time? It's not about the agreement. It's about the way he had a skill, the way he built his business, the way people told him he would never make it in radio, and he still made it in radio himself.
Dude, let's not get started. He was deaf for a while in broadcasting.
Yeah.
And the timing and the production did not suffer at all. The only way people noticed was that he was sounding different, because when you lose your hearing like that, and I know how this goes as well, the tiny bit, losing my hearing temporarily in my left ear, you start to sound different, and so you adjust your voice, right, to make it sound like it should sound, and you start to sound different. That's the only reason people really picked up on it. And I have to mention one of the detractions, because it's kind of something, people like to bring up something from the early, I think the late 80s during the AIDS crisis. He did a segment, recurring segment, where he read the names of people who had died of AIDS. And, it was kind of gross. And this is the one that sort of made it into every obituary, which I thought was kind of funny, because they left out the second part of the story. When he stopped, he did it a couple times. I don't remember exactly, because I wasn't listening to the show back then. But when he stopped, he then went on to donate tons of money to charities for AIDS research. And he sort of like learned his lesson. And we get back to the only reason I bring it up even at all is because of what you just said. As much as I disagree with Rush on things, I can see where he's making moral choices, right? Where he's learning from mistakes, where he's, changing for the better, right? So it is someone that I can respect and mourn their passing as someone who helped influence my thinking. Certainly disagree on a lot of things. I'm not religious, to make one obvious one, right? I'm not Republican, which is another obvious one. But, I can respect that even though I haven't listened to the show in probably 15, 20 years, I would at times say, I wonder what Rush thinks about this, right? How does he break this down? The media is doing this crazy thing. What does he think about it, right? And to me, that's a sign that for someone who never went to college, pretty good, someone who had an influence on culture and who's, if not insightful in their thinking, at least helped me understand the thinking of the sort of right side of the aisle.
Well, and so much of what you just said, William, it's so important in the year 2021. The whole idea of breaking down the media narrative and the prevailing narrative, he's not the only one who does that anymore. I think for a long time he was the only one who did that. But I think in many ways, he's the one who made that mainstream. And he's the one who had a generation of people, created a generation of people doing that. And you could argue certainly this show in specific, but podcasting in general wouldn't exist without him. How much of what Adam Carolla does now is similar to what Rush Limbaugh did back then?
I think that's really important. Adam is a great broadcaster as well, of course. But, there is no such thing as an AM tuner in your car in Europe. Why are there AM tuners in the United States? Rush Limbaugh. AM radio was dead. D-E-E-D dead. Rush single-handedly resurrected, created talk radio. It's crazy, right? Like, think of the millions of jobs that has. Even reviving sports talk, right? The sports talk was dying back then in the 80s. It's crazy what he was able to do.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, is it's more than just, to me, mourning someone who influenced me personally. I mean, we just said it in specific, but how many people exist nowadays that influence the entire country like that and change the entire country? That doesn't really exist anymore. And like we said, agree or disagree with him, and I had a lot I agreed with him on and some things I disagreed with him on. He had an impact like few other people had an impact. And what's sad is, something my dad said that Rush Limbaugh said recently was that what made him sad was he said the same thing for 30 years and it still seems like people didn't get the message, that he wasn't heard. And that's crazy. And I think that speaks to the moral responsibility we all have when we hear the truth and we know what's going on, to live it and make the small differences in our lives. Because what I told my dad was, you know, maybe he didn't see the effects, but as we were just talking about on this show, what have I done differently because of the way he influenced me? And maybe that's what his effect is. And, you know, Daniel always says politics is downstream from culture. Well, culture is downstream from individuals. So. All right. On a final note, you know, we can talk all about culture. We can talk all about politics. We can talk about individuals. But we're all beholden to reality, William. And I think we got a big dose of that. You would have thought we got a dose of it from coronavirus, right? You would have thought we got a big dose of it where we can't control the virus, but we seem to think we can. But I think we got a huge dose of it with what happened with this huge Arctic blast that covered most of the country. I actually love the chart. William, have you seen the picture where it shows everywhere that was cold and like everywhere was cold except like Florida and California? Did you see that one?
I did see that.
Yeah.
Hey, and for the record, it's getting cold here at night. During the day, the Arctic blast didn't really hit us during the day. It was like in the 60s, but it was getting it down in the 40s, which, you know, that's panic weather here in L.A. So,
well, I know. And Florida had its week of winter like a couple weeks ago where it got that cold, and then it was 80 all week. But last night, like, I went out to dinner and we ended up sitting outside and I didn't wear a jacket. And I was cold. You know, I don't want to say like I was freezing or anything, but it was like in the low 50s, high 40s.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's affecting everywhere. But the point I want to make is that there's been all these arguments, right? There's been all these arguments about like, oh, this is the fault of deregulation and this is the fault of Texas being on its own grid, or oh, this is the fault of wind power. And I think there are merits to a lot of these conversations, and I don't want to talk about like which one is more correct. But to a certain extent, to me, William, this is us trying to act like as humans, we can control all situations and all circumstances. When instead, shouldn't we be more prepared for emergency situations than we are? It seems to me that in the same sense of COVID, I said this at the beginning, why aren't we prepared for this? Why weren't people living in Texas prepared themselves to go without power, to go without water? It's the whole idea of, oh, wow, we've been so lulled to sleep by our advancements as a society that we don't realize how fragile and precious life actually is.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, like, I think that there's a amount of like anti-fragility or robustness that we should expect from people, right? And now I have complete sympathy for people being caught off guard by these things, but you know, like you said, at the same time, like the lesson we should all take from this is like, hey, do you have some bottled water set aside? Do you have, you know, some things, you know, that can charge things up? You know, like I know that, you know, I try to make sure, you know, my car is ready to go for, 100 miles in case of earthquake here. Right. Like if I need to get out, I need to make sure I can get out. Right. Because I'm not going to
be
the asshole.
Everyone's going to be on the road at the same time in California.
Yeah, that's true. But that's why you just know the back roads. Right. But you understand what I'm saying, right? Like there's this aspect. I have things in my, I have a freezer, right? I have things in the freezer if I need to eat. Right. Thankfully, the desperation for heat is not a thing I need to worry about here in California. Even if it gets very cold, the house is going to stay warm enough to survive in. And I have a fireplace. I have wood. So, worst case, I could put some wood on the fire.
Warm clothes, right? Like,
yeah,
I mean, I have sweatsuits I can put on, and I have like, we have a down comforter on our bed. Like, worst case scenario, if it gets down to it, like, can put on my clothes and get in bed and I'll stay warm.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I think we should be encouraging and helping each other, encourage each other to be prepared for the unexpected, the expected unexpected, right? To turn a phrase, a Bushism.
Well, it's a Boy Scouts thing, William. It's a Junior Woodchucks thing, right? The idea of always being prepared. It's what you said about bottled water. 40 bottles of water are $3 at Sam's Club.
Yeah. I've got just a stack in the garage. It's collecting dust. It's ready. Right. You know?
Right. And I mean, look, we know in modern society, it's not, I mean, it's, they're already coming out of it in Texas, right? It's already, they're already starting to look better. It's not going to last more than 2 weeks unless at a certain point, then you're just going to have to turn on your survival skills and start hunting for food, in which case you're more than fucked than anything. But it's not going to last more than 2 weeks. If you, in general, always keep an extra case or two of water on hand, you're fine. Right. If you always have a food for a couple extra weeks, you're fine. It's not that hard to prepare for in today's day and age. If you own a house, get a generator. This isn't doomsday prepping. This isn't we're not saying get a bunker.
Get a little gas grill. Right. That's enough to thaw water if it's frozen or cook some food if you're got no power.
Right. And then that's the thing about this. Like, even right now, we're having a conversation like, how can individuals protect themselves and protect their families? But instead, what would everyone rather talk about online? It seemed to me it was just about dunking on Ted Cruz. Like, oh, he left the country. Like,
can you imagine, like, you had a vacation and you're like, oh, thank God, I'm going on vacation and it's going to be, like, cold this week. And then all of a sudden that turns into, well, clearly he hates the people of Texas because he left during their time of need. Their time of need? He's a federal senator. What is he going to do?
Well, right. There's the whole logistical standpoint of it, is what you just said. But it's also like, why is that our focus? Like, what are you achieving and what are you accomplishing besides feeling good about yourself for being morally superior? That's all it really is. Like, when things like this happen, my thoughts don't turn to, like, Ted Cruz. Why is that your first thought? Why is that what occupies your thought? It's something I just don't understand. Like,
hey, now if the head of the Texas power grid was going to Cancun or wherever Ted Cruz went, then I think that would be I would care about that, right? Like, this is an emergency. You need to be back on your job.
Well, certainly, 100%. I agree with that. But again, do we even know the name of the guy who's in charge of the Texas power grid? Has that been circulated?
I thought it was Ted Cruz.
I see what you did there. I mean, you would think it was, and that's the point. It's not, but you would think it was by the way these people are acting. I'm more concerned about the people who I know who live there. I mean, Midsider Michael lives in Austin. Trailer Takedown Dan is buying a house in Austin and going to move there soon. I don't know if I'm doxing all these people. I don't think I am. It's a big city. But when they tell me, you know, when Michael tells me he's snowed in and can't drive anywhere, then I get concerned. Then I get concerned because that's what worries me. That's what bothers me. Not Ted Cruz. This is what I was just saying about survival and what you were saying. What would Ted Cruz do that would help Michael and his family?
Absolutely nothing.
Right, unless he had some sort of pull where he could be like, okay, we're going to send the National Guard to that person's house. I don't know what else he could do. Also, I have a question for you about all this, William. Like, shoot. Can people not walk places anymore? And what I mean by that is I know stores are, you know, out of power too, but like, isn't it to Walmart's benefit to open up in this situation to sell as much food as quickly as possible? And if you have cash on hand, they can do cash so you can buy food from them and any water they have in stock by walking.
Well,
some
of these people, Texas is a big state. Some of these people are 30, 40 miles outside of a grocery store.
Oh, no, I have complete sympathy for that, but that's part of the thing.
Yeah. But I think they're probably better prepared. I mean, you don't live my parents live 5 miles outside of our little town on a farm. They have a generator. They have multiple generators, right? They have a little generator for when it's a thunderstorm and they just want to make sure the fridge is still running. And they have a big boy if it's like, it's an ice storm, you know, all the power lines are down, we're going to be without power for a couple of weeks. They got a big one, a big boy to power the whole house.
Right. But that's part of what I'm saying about even your choice of where to live. Like, I thought about where I was going to live. Like, these were, you know, decisions I made knowing these things, right? Part of Florida is, you know, when hurricanes are coming, so you have time to prep in a way. It's like, oh, the hurricane's coming. Okay, I'm going to go buy a couple of cases of water. Oh, I'm going to buy a little extra food right now because there's a hurricane coming in a few days. That's something you can prepare for. And likewise, I'm within a mile of a Walmart. If things go really sideways, I am not opposed to walking there. And I'm not saying during the hurricane. I'm saying once the hurricane passes, if the power lines are down and I need something, I am not opposed to walking there.
I think it's a much better visual if we picture you just in like that that Batman t-shirt in the hurricane behind the news crew guy, you know, as he's holding his hat, pretending it's really windy. And you're just like casually walking to the Walmart to pick up some extra, you know, protein.
Yeah, no, 100%. 100%. I don't know. It's just it seems to me that this is a lesson in preparedness. It's a lesson in not being mentally dependent. As much as they're trying to make us dependent, we shouldn't become mentally dependent. We need to be mentally independent. We are responsible for our own lives. I am responsible for my own life. That also means I'm responsible for the content I put into my head. Let's talk about some of that in The Hopeful Romantic with JML. Put me into syndication, broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't find a new pitch to throw the studio. I need a rerun to better cast the next series of events in the air timeline lapse. My made for TV type was written off in the last season when I wasn't focused on. As always, if you want to continue the conversation during the week, you should join our Discord channel. You can do so by going to themidside.com or themidside.com/podcast. Click on any episode link and there'll be a link there to join the Discord. This recently we had a flood of new signups. I don't know, new members. I don't know how you say it, William. New joinees. What's the term you use for someone joining Discord?
Joiners. I don't know.
Joiners. All right. We'll say joiners. And apparently we are part of the Objectivist Cinematic Universe now. I don't know. It sounds cool. It sounds cool what they're saying in the chat. I like them. They're cool guys. So come on in, join us. We're having a good old time in the Discord. And something they talk about in the Discord that I don't have access to is there's an Expanse Season 5 spoilers channel. And it tells me there's a notification there. It tells me it's unread. And I still haven't watched it. So William wants to talk about it a little bit. So William, briefly, can you give us a non-spoiler review of Season 5 of The Expanse? And my big question is, does it return to form? Because you know I wasn't really a big fan of Season 4 because it was very limited in scope. To me, Season 4 was a long episode of Stargate SG-1.
Yeah. Yeah, so it does return to form, a different variation, though. Much like Season 1, it's a slow burn. Things accumulate. You start to get to know characters in ways that you didn't before. It clearly motivates the choices so that when the action starts to happen, about half to 60% through the shows in the season, action really starts to pick up. And when there's some snap decisions that happen that you know are coming because of the quality of the writing, you know the choice, right? And without giving away any spoilers, I will say there's Holden makes a decision to fire or not fire the Rosie's missiles, which I'm not going to say anything other than that because the rest would be spoilers. And you know exactly why he hesitates. And you know exactly, like, it's so clearly motivated what is going on in his head without him even saying it. Meanwhile, you have the character saying, what are you doing? What are you doing? And it makes sense to you. You understand it. And I think that's the quality of the writing is spot on this season. There are some, again, spoiler free, there are some emotional deaths. There is some huge impact on the universe. And then I will say, if you're looking for a lot of alien weirdness happening, that is not what this season's about. This season is about, I think, setting up for that. Certainly the last episode is sort of like a gut punch to, oh, remember this thing that's happening? And it's really fascinating, I think, what's going to happen in the next season. Because I think there's only one season left, right? Before they go on
hiatus.
That's
what I was going to say. It was announced that there's only six seasons, right?
Right. And I think the story reason why, again, spoiler free, is the books. I think there's a huge time jump after what would be the content for the next season. There's a huge time jump. So, you know, there's a all the different characters are much older, so it sort of makes sense to go on hiatus after this season, right?
So they're going on hiatus, they're not ending.
They aren't saying the show is done, but they aren't saying they're going to immediately start production for like what would be season 7, right? So I guess they're trying to hedge their bets both ways, right? They're basically saying, hey, this part of the story is done at the end of the season, right? No.
Interesting.
Yep. The effects are phenomenal. The story is phenomenal. The bad guy is a total tool narcissist that makes a ton of sense. The acting, especially the actress, I forgot her name, that plays Naomi Nagata, fabulous. It is gut-wrenching to watch at times. It's again, no spoilers, it's a little Kill Bill-ish in the sense of you know, the Uma Thurman being in situations that are just almost uncomfortable to watch, right? But it's part of her emotional journey, and it you know, to see her, she makes these choices about what is family and who her family is that are played out visually. And I don't know, injuriously onto the character of Naomi, which makes it super gripping. One last thing I'll mention is, you know, the episodes kind of come out in spurts and starts for the season. I actually like that. I would caution you not to just binge watch it all. Give yourself some time to chew the episode before you just burn through all of them. I think there's because it's a slow burn, I think you will miss some of that thinking about what the characters are doing and really feeling those emotions if you just sat and watched the entire season in one day.
Help people with that? Why don't we help people with that? You said people in the Discord are asking for you to do episode discussions, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah. I have a proposal for you. I don't have Amazon Prime because I didn't want to pay for it for the year. So I will have to figure out a way to watch the episodes. But why don't we, in a month or so, right, once I have to get through wrestling season and everything, why don't we do a sideshow of just us discussing each episode, and we'll do it like weekly?
Yeah, I think that would be great. I think hopefully let us know in Discord if you think this is a great idea. Do it in the general channel. If you do it in the spoiler only discussion channel, spoiled folks will see it. But yeah, I'd love to break down.
I won't see it, and I need to hear validation that people want to hear me talk more. So please say it in the general channel.
No, people want to hear me talk more, Justin. They don't care about you. I'm the whole reason people come to the show. I mean, that's clearly that and the puppy.
We'll see always the puppy, but we'll see in the ratings this week what happens.
Oh no. So yeah, who should watch season 5 of The Expanse? Literally everyone. You should like it if you. Are you interested in science fiction or good dramatic writing? The acting is also fairly notable in this one. Do you need to watch the other seasons? Yes, there is a lot of context that would be missing. So if you aren't caught up, take the time to catch up. Should you watch it all at once? Absolutely not. I think it takes away from... this is one of those shows that you need to think about the episode and the cliffhangers... Our cliffhanger is not because they want you to tune to next week, but because you have something to think about what just happened, right? You need to understand and think about and really ponder the consequences of what this means for the solar system in some cases. It's crazy. Who should not watch this? I think that if you're looking for a lot of action, I don't think you're going to find it in this season. There is some epic space battles in the later episodes in the back half of the season. But if you're expecting a continuous acceleration of bigger, more explosions, that's not what this was about. This was about making you deeply connect to these characters so that when when the next season happens and we're dealing with some alien bullshit, that it shows you what they're fighting for. And exploring these characters that we've been with for a few years now was just fascinating. The stuff we learned about Amos and Naomi and everyone is just phenomenal.
Yeah, and I think I have an idea of what happens with Amos due to the side stories. But what you're saying does sound consistent with season 1, where, you know, season 1, really, we got to know Thomas Jane's character. And then that had a huge payoff season two, season three. So yeah. it does sound very consistent. It sounds like typical Expanse storytelling. So that's encouraging. We also like to, on the show, talk about things that are upcoming in our trailer takedown segment. I always post the preview for it. Well, not always, usually on Saturday mornings. This week I posted it on Sunday morning. I was just busy all day on Saturday. I do that so you can watch the trailers before you listen to the episode or after you listen to the episode or during. You could alternate. You could listen to us talk about a trailer, watch it, or watch a trailer, listen to us talk about it, watch a trailer, listen to us talk about it.
Trailer takedown. First trailer.
The Vault is it looks like a typical heist movie starring Freddie Highmore. Freddie Highmore is a really intelligent engineer. I think he's been typecasted at this point, right, on the show The Good Doctor. He's a really intelligent doctor. And one of the guys from Game of Thrones, not the actual character, the actor, I believe he played Davros, is asking him to help his crew break into the Vault. There's not really much else to say about this. Like I said, it looks like a very typical movie, but it looks like it's high in production value. I like Freddie Highmore. I really liked Bates Motel. So, you know, I'll give this a chance. If it's in theaters and there's nothing else to watch, I would go and sit and have a good time seeing a movie like this. Hug. William?
So, this is Ocean's 11, starring that guy that you just said. I'm actually in. This looks fun. I want to go to the movies and see a movie like this. It doesn't look like the... I need to worry about any social justice interference. It seems like... A fun heist movie. Looks like the action and production quality is high. I was gonna say something about the music sounded a little generic. I know that seems like a small nitpick, but maybe that's just the trailer. But nothing to knock me out of it. It looks like a fun one. If California ever opens their movie theaters, I would want to see. Maybe I'll have to drive to Nevada to see this, but I would definitely hug it.
Hug. Second trailer.
Mortal Kombat is the reboot, remake? I don't know. It's a remake, I think, of the video game adaptation movie. This first came out in the 90s. There were two versions of it. There was the original and the sequel. They were decent. And I have the same thought about this one. There was nothing in this trailer that really wowed me. Although I will say the second time I watched it, I thought a lot better of it. And maybe it's because the second time I watched the restricted trailer, which you can see on our website. And maybe I just liked that better because there was more to it. I don't hate the casting. All the, you know, the typical characters are in there. I think, was Johnny Cage in there? I don't remember. William can update me. But we had Liu Kang, we had Sonya Blade, we had Jax, we had Kano, Kung Lao, Raiden, right? All the big characters are in there. Scorpion, Sub-Zero. They even showed Smoke. They showed Molina. So all the big characters are in there. It'll be on HBO Max at the same time. Again, if there's nothing else in theaters, I will go to see this. But if there is other things in theaters and I have to choose, I'll watch this on HBO Max. I will see this at some point. I just don't know when. Hug.
Hug.
So the history of Mortal Kombat movies is not good. It's the meme about video game movies always being terrible. So that being said, this looks like it has a good production quality. It looks like some good action. You know, good over-the-top violence. There's guns. There's blades going through people's faces. But I will have to say, I have to quote Hal from Malcolm in the Middle, no one ever beats Sub-Zero, and it looks like Sub-Zero is the bad guy. So we might be the bad guys might win at the end of the episode. Who knows? Or the end of the story. We'll see. But I'm gonna questionably hug this.
Hug? Final trailer.
Zack Snyder's Justice League is... Oh, if you're listening to... I was going to say watch. If you're listening to this show, you know what it is, and you know I'm going to hug this. So I'm just going to get the hug out of the way. Hit the clip, William.
Hug! Hug?
Okay, I didn't know if you were going to keep going with the hugs, but...
Oh, I was going to do them all, but no. No, just two is good.
Okay, just two is good. Look, it looked good. This looked like more what I expected from the Justice League movie than what we actually got. This is clearly a different movie. You can start seeing it. The big deal here is obviously twofold. One, where the return of the line that was in the original trailer for Justice League, you know, where Wonder Woman says they said the Age of Heroes would never come again, and Batman says it will, it has to. The return of that is so thematically important and so Snyder. Like, just that one line being the key line, the crescendo of the trailer, was huge. And then also, you know, we saw some of the reshoots. The reshoots are about 4 minutes. We heard that Jared Leto's Joker was going to be in the movie, and we saw him. We saw him, and Zack Snyder did something insane, insanely meta, with the trailer. He, as Zack Snyder's Justice League came up, Jared Leto's Joker says, "We live in a society," which is a reference back to that campaign to try and get Joaquin Phoenix's Joker to say we live in a society in his movie. And then it cuts to the Joker and he says, "We live in a society where honor is a distant memory." And that's so meta because it's twofold. One, that's literally what's happened in these movies. One, Man of Steel, the first movie, The first movie, Man of Steel, was all about him finding that honor and fighting for it and making him what it's about. Two is that honor is called into question because people are seeing him as possibly a devil figure, and then they kill him. And then three, we don't know what the battle is going to be, but we do know Jared Leto is appearing in the nightmare sequence, which is the post-apocalyptic world. So that's where all of society is destroyed. So we see the thematic arc of that line. And that line is confirming the theme of the movies. And also, William, we're so close to this as a society. And what happened with Zack Snyder's Justice League shows that. The fact that it took 3 years longer for it to come out than it should have. That, you know, the whole story of what happened with it, which you can read the fictionalized version of in The Cut, themidside.com/The Cut. Didn't intend to plug that, but it worked right there, so I threw that in. And I think it's fair to say, and I want to see your opinion on this, William, I think we're living currently in the world of BVS. What do you think?
I think that's a great way to put it. And of course, I'm going to hug this and get that out of the way as well.
Hug.
I loved the tag with the Joker at the end. I think, you know, I don't remember where I had saw it, and maybe we had already talked about this, Justin, but someone had mentioned that the studio wouldn't let it be more than, like, apparently Snyder wanted to release a graphic novel to go along with the movie originally, that where Joker kills Robin, to kind of give context to the whole, you know, you see the Robin costume, right, in the movie. And
the rumor is actually that that's going to be part of Justice League 2 or 3. And that was always the intent. I think part of what happened with this is Snyder is not sure if Justice League 2 or 3 is ever going to happen, because it's a lot easier to give someone $70 million to finish footage that's already in the can. You know, if somebody says, "Oh, we have $350 million movie, and all you have to do is pay $70 million for it." Well, you go, "Okay." But if you had to greenlit another $350 million, that's a lot bigger investment. And yeah. I think the plan was always to bring Joker into Justice League 2, perhaps as a larger arc where if Batman and Joker have to work together in the nightmare, Batman's going to have to come to terms with the fact that Joker killed Robin. Sorry. Yeah. And I think narratively that makes sense. And maybe Snyder threw this in because that's the plan for it to always go there, but he doesn't know if he's ever going to get to film that. But at least now, and Snyder said that, at least now this Joker and this Batman get to interact. We get to see Affleck and Leto interact, whereas we wouldn't have otherwise. And we get to see Snyder's version of Leto Joker. So I think that was that intent always exists. Whether we get to see that story, I don't know. And I think this is Snyder's way of saying, well, if you're giving me this chance, I'm going to not leave that to my imagination because it's so important to show.
Yeah, I agree. I think I loved everything about this trailer. I can't wait to see it. I know I'm on puppy duty, but definitely going to have some folks come over and enjoy it in all 4K and Dolby Atmos here in the Dales Lawn home theater, the only theater still open in California. So yeah, let's do this.
That brings an end to this trip into the midside. What did we learn, William?
Well, I learned that due to masking requirements, I'm going to have to get the puppy a mask, but I'm going to take this dog to the beach and introduce him to as many strangers as possible. Fuck COVID. Justin, what did you learn this trip?
I learned the importance of being explicit about your emergency preparations. And I don't mean doomsday preparations. I just mean making the decision to protect yourself and knowing the style of life you're choosing and what you need to do to protect yourself if an unforeseen emergency arises. As always, I'd like to thank everyone for listening. You, the listeners, are who keeps this show going. Otherwise, it would just be myself and William talking into a microphone or just having a phone call with each other, which for some reason we would be strangely trying to broadcast. Thank you to our Liberty.me listeners. You guys know I, in particular, have a love for libertarians. And, you know, I walk that line of, am I libertarian? Am I objectivist? What's the difference? Why do they hate each other? Why can't we all just get along? If you want to support us besides Patreon or Discord, Patreon or Locals, you can do so at themidside.com/store. Pick up a shirt. You can buy my book at themidside.com/thecut. As I said before, you can support us on Patreon per episode at themidside.com/patreon or on Locals per month at themidside.com/locals. That is how we keep the lights on. And the most important thing you can do is, or should I have said or the most important thing you can do is tell a friend. That's how the show grows. That's how it keeps going. That's how we became part of the Objectivist Cinematic Universe. We told friends and they told friends, and all of a sudden we've opened up this new community of Objectivists, or we found our way into it. Let's continue to grow that, and let's make it more than just Objectivists. This concludes your journey into the midside. I'm Justin M. Lezeski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have an unbelievably cute day. I would say we had zero puppy interruptions. I think a little ball bouncing, but there was no meowing. So is the cat still alive?
Yeah, you didn't hear Echo. She came in here and hit the doorstop. You didn't hear a boing.
I didn't hear that, but maybe some listeners did.
Oh, I thought I heard the puppy bark.
Maybe Colt would bark, but I don't think the puppy barked. He hasn't barked. He barked one time. Because he was scared because Colt barked.